Zoom recording. There we go. Cool. Thank you for that reminder. That was awesome. All right. So how's everybody doing? Do we have any questions this morning before we get started? I can give people a few more minutes to log in. Looks like we're getting pretty good though. We got 22. That's not so bad. So everybody, I'm hoping, is doing well and is staying healthy and figuring out how to make life work in this new paradigm that we've got for this time. We're going to pick up with stereochemistry. And I was thinking that maybe what I ought to do is backtrack for a second. Let's do something really quick before. I kick off with designation of configuration. Let's ask if there's any stereochemistry bonds, stereochemical centers in this molecule. This is amphetamine. Do we see any stereochemical centers in this molecule? Any stereogenic centers? Eric says yes. Let me go through and number the carbons real quick. Let's do it this way. Let's start off with this one being number 1, 2, 3, 4. We'll go around this way, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. So there's 9 carbons total. Number 2. Yes, exactly. Okay, so we've got 1 stereogenic center at number 2. So if we take number 2 and we look at number 2 a little bit more closely, it does have 4 different things attached to number 2. So there is a hydrogen also at number 2. And so we could say that the 4 different things are that there's a hydrogen that is there. I've got a methyl group, which is there. I've got the amine group, which is here, and I've got the last group. Let's see, I need one more color. Let's do orange color. The last group is out this direction. And so that's 4 different groups that are attached to number 2, and that makes number 2 a stereogenic center. So when we're looking for a stereogenic center right now, we're looking for a carbon that has 4 different groups attached to it. And number 2 fits that bill in that molecule. Okay, designation of configuration. That's where we're starting today. And on configuration, when we have a stereogenic center, the stereogenic center can have 2 possible configurations. I just have to show you for a second. I'm going to take my phone for a second and show you guys what's going on down here. I'm trying to write on my iPad, and Finley has decided that he wants to lay on my iPad. This is not very conducive to lecturing, but he's going to have to like give me a little bit more space here. Where did I start numbering? I just started numbering on that molecule in any place just to give you a number of carbons. Okay, Finley's going in the other room. There you go, buddy. See you later. Where did I start numbering? Why did I start numbering? It didn't matter where I started numbering. I was not numbering for nomenclature. I was only numbering to give you guys an ability to answer me when I asked which carbon was stereogenic. So there was no preference in the way I numbered there. And second question, last lecture you were saying that stereogenic center is always sp3, but you also mentioned an exception. So what's the exception? Oh, that's a great question. And do I want to answer that question right now? I don't want to answer that just yet. Let me get to exceptions a little bit later. Let me not answer that question at the moment. For right now, let's say that stereogenic centers are sp3. And then we will open that up and I will show you some stereogenic centers that are not SP3 a little bit later. I don't want to get too far afield from where I'm going with this. Okay, designation of configuration. When we have a stereogenic center, for instance, let's just make a molecule that has four things attached in general. So we'll have A, B, C, and D. There are two possible configurations. And these configurations get specific names. So these two are mirror images. So I have mirror image compounds here. And these two compounds would be enantiomers. And because they're enantiomers, there are two configurations. And those two configurations, we are going to give names to them. We are going to call a clockwise configuration is going to equal an R configuration. And a counterclockwise is going to equal an S. And the way that we are going to figure out clockwise and counterclockwise is to go back and use the Kahn-Engel-Prelog rules. So the Kahn-Engel-Prelog rules are going to give us a prioritization, and then we're going to figure out whether or not those prioritizations are clockwise or counterclockwise in a Newman projection. So we're going to use the Kahn-Engel-Prelog with Newman projections. Okay, so let's see what we can do here. Let's take a molecule and remind first what the Kahn-Engel-Prelog rules are. So the Kahn-Engel-Prelog rules said that we want the highest atomic mass at first point of difference . That's the first thing. And that lone pairs have the lowest priority. So if we have something that has lone pairs of electrons, we didn't state that rule last time, but that's one of the rules. Lone pairs of electrons have the lowest priority. And then double and triple bonds . The way that we deal with them is we split them so that if I have a double bond that is to X, that is going to equal two bonds where one of the X's is sort of like a faux X. And if I have a triple bond to some element, then I treat that as if I have three bonds to that element. Two of them are artificial, but I just take a double or a triple bond and I expand it out so that I assume that I have however many of that elements I have based on how many bonds I have to it. So those are the Kahn-Engel-Prelog rules. And along with these Kahn-Engel-Prelog rules, what we're going to say is that the highest priority group gets number one. And we're going to go through and we're going to rank them. So we're going to rank 1 through 4. So we rank groups 1 through 4 with the highest priority group getting number one. So let's take a molecule and just a simple molecule that we had before. So we're going to put a chlorine and a hydrogen in here. So this is 2-butyl chloride. And what we do is we go through and we take the four different groups that are attached to this. So let's highlight four different groups. We've got a hydrogen, which is here. We've got a methyl. We've got an ethyl. And we've got a chlorine. So those are our four different groups. And what we need to do is prioritize each one of those groups and rank them 1 through 4. So that's the first thing that we're going to do. And so the groups that we have are hydrogen. We have a carbon that has 3 hydrogens attached. That's the methyl group. We have a carbon that has 2 hydrogens and a carbon attached. That's the ethyl group. And we have a chlorine. So those are our 4 different groups. We'll color code them so that they're all matched up so that we can see where everything is. That's the ethyl group. And the methyl was orange. And the hydrogen was red. Okay, so in these 4 different groups and ranking these 4 different groups, the highest atomic mass gets number 1. So the first one here that has the highest atomic mass, chlorine, is gonna get number 1. And the lowest atomic mass between hydrogen and carbon is going to be hydrogen, so hydrogen's gonna get number 4. And then we've got to decide between the 2 carbons which one of them has the higher mass. And because they're both carbons, we extend out and we look at the hydrogens and we say, okay, they have hydrogen in common until the carbon is the kicker. And because the carbon is the kicker, this one is number 2 and the other one is number 3. So I'm giving higher priority to the carbon that has the carbon attached to it. So basically my rankings are thus: 4, 1, 2, and 3. Now, the next thing that I do after I rank all the groups is I take and I do a Newman projection, putting the lowest group back. So the next thing that I do here is Newman projection. With lowest group back. Basically, what you're doing is you're looking down the stereogenic carbon to the lowest group. And you look down that bond. When we look down that bond, what I like to do is I like to imagine that I am basically grabbing an ice cream cone and turning it and looking at it. So I will grab onto this bond that is the hydrogen bond here, and I will turn that around to the back and then look down it and see what I see. So in doing that, what's going to happen is we're going to get a Newman projection. And with that Newman projection, the hydrogen is going to be in the rear. And then there are going to be 3 other bonds that are out in front of this. And I need to figure out where those 3 bonds are that are out in front of this and where those groups are. This is the hardest part about doing that. So let me see if I can take and do this. I should have done it ahead of time and I didn't think about it. Let's see if I can take WebMO and to put in I may not be able to do it here so easily. Okay, and then I want to rotate this. And I put the chlorine back. So what I want to do is go back to build and my periodic table and grab a chlorine and put it on the back. Okay, so now this molecule is what I have drawn here. You can see that the chlorine is back, the hydrogen is forward when the methyl group is on the right-hand side. Going back to the three-dimensional image. The three-dimensional image now has the methyl group on the right-hand side, the chlorine is back, and the hydrogen is forward. So everybody agrees that this model is consistent with what I drew before. What I'm going to do is I'm going to rotate it so that the hydrogen is back and look down the hydrogen bond, and that is the Newman projection that I need to draw. Methyl on the left, ethyl on the right, chlorine on top. So I come back to this image, and I will change my bonds to be consistent with my picture. Chlorine goes on top, ethyl on the right, methyl on the left. Let's go back and look at the image one more time. Ethyl on the right, methyl on the left, chlorine on the top. And you can see that the hydrogen is back, and I'm looking down the carbon-hydrogen bond, the stereogenic center, and the hydrogen bond that's there. Okay, let's take that and just color code that much so that our ethyl group was green, the methyl group was orange, and chlorine was purple. And we had prioritized systems of number one, methyl is number three, ethyl is number two. Now what I do is I look at the numbering system and I decide, does the numbering system go in a clockwise or counterclockwise orientation? I go from one to two, from two to three, and you can see that as I'm rotating back three to one, that I am going in a clockwise orientation. That clockwise orientation means that this molecule is an R configuration. And now what I can do is I can take the name of this molecule. It's not how I drew it though. I drew it this way. With the chlorine back, the hydrogen forward, this was 2-chloro-butane. And because I know that it is now in an R configuration, I can put the R out in front of the name. And this name now specifies which of the enantiomers I'm discussing. So this is the stereochemical configuration. This, by the way, does not tell you which way it rotates plane polarized light. What this does is it simply is a configuration that tells us whether the chlorine group is forwards or backwards and allows us to be able to draw the specific stereo enantiomer, but it doesn't tell us how it reacts with plane polarized light. So this is just an artificial nomenclature system, a name that tells us how to redraw the molecule and tells us what the stereochemistry of that molecule is. And if I take the enantiomer of this, so we can take its enantiomer and we'll draw that molecule really quick. We'll put the chlorine forward and the hydrogen back. The numbering system that we had does not change. Chlorine is still number one. Hydrogen is number four. Methyl group was number three. The ethyl group was number two. And when I take and draw this one and put it with the hydrogen back, what I get is I get now the ethyl group on the left, the methyl group on the right. And so basically what I'm doing is I'm looking down the bond. And this one's a little bit easier to see where the groups are. Methyl is three, ethyl is two, chlorine is number one. And I'm sweeping around this time in a counterclockwise orientation from one to two to three. That counterclockwise orientation tells me that this is an S stereoisomer, an S configuration. And therefore, the name of this molecule would be S-2-chloro-butane. And we could do that for every stereocenter. For for each molecule. So if we have a molecule that has more than one stereocenter, we can go through and we can name each of the stereocenters and give them a stereochemical designation. And then we can match that to our molecule. So let's take a molecule that's got two stereocenters in it and see how we would go about doing that for two stereocenters. Unless anybody has any questions, because that's the first time that we've kind of gone through that. So let me stop for a second and say, are there any questions in terms of how we went through rank the prioritization? Once we rank them, put the lowest priority group back, draw the Newman, put in the prioritized numbers, and figure out whether they go in a clockwise or counterclockwise orientation. Any questions from that? Finn, what you got?
So they're just mirror images of each other, right? That's basically what they are?
They are mirror images of each other, yes. And so those two have the exact same name, but they have different stereochemical designations. So one is S2-chlorobutane, the other one is R2-chlorobutane, and they are mirror images of one another. Absolutely correct.
All right. So then the only thing that makes them different is their rotation?
Is the way that they rotate plane polarized light. So yes, but the way that they rotate plane polarized light has to do with whether they rotate clockwise or counterclockwise. And we have not dealt with that yet in terms of the name. We will get to that in a little bit. But when you know both its sign of rotation and how it rotates plane polarized light, and you know its stereochemical configuration, you are said to know its absolute configuration. And that is, and it is completely random whether or not an R enantiomer will rotate clockwise or counterclockwise with plane polarized light. An S enantiomer can rotate clockwise or counterclockwise with plane polarized light. They are completely separate. Francisco, dextrorotatory and levorotatory define the way it rotates the light. Dextrorotatory is clockwise, levorotatory is counterclockwise. Those are different from R and S. So those are physical properties. Dextrorotatory, levorotatory, those are physical properties of a molecule. Whereas S and R are man-made configuration nomenclature of a molecule. Elian, what question have you got? You want to unmute your mic and ask a question quick?
What if you have different groups and you don't know which one to prioritize, like a hydroxyl group and a methyl group?
We will have, that's a good question. We use the Coningle-Prelog rules in order to be able to prioritize them. So the Coningle-Prelog rules are going to be what we use to prioritize the groups. And it doesn't matter how big the group is. We look for the first, the difference at the, how do I want to say it? We're looking for the first point of difference. And at the first point of difference, we assess based on the Coningle-Prelog rules which one has higher priority. And so we'll see, we can use a lot of different groups. Actually, let me use a hydroxyl group and a chlorine group in the next molecule, and then we'll see how that pans out, okay? Any other questions before I move on into this next example? Okay, let's take and let's do a molecule that has six carbons in it, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Let's put a chlorine group on that carbon, and let's put a hydroxyl group there. So this is a specific isomer. It is a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Actually, I got to number it from the other direction because the hydroxyl takes priority. So if I want to do it for nomenclature, it would be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. We haven't done nomenclature of hydroxyls, but the hydroxyl takes priority. So this is 3 all. It is a 5-chloro, and it is a hexane. So the way that I put the name together is it is going to be 5-chloro. Hex, not hex, but hexane XN dash 3 all. That's the best way to name it. And this is a specific stereochemical isomer. And so I have stereogenic centers at number 3 and at number 5. And what we need to do is assess those two stereogenic centers and figure out whether each of those centers are R or S. So let's deal with number 3 first. And in looking at number 3, what I want to do is I want to go through and prioritize each of the groups. So we'll redraw the molecule. And in redrawing it, we will put the hydroxyl group back. We will put the hydrogen forward. And then the chlorine is still down here. We'll put its hydrogen in too, but it's not going to be nearly as important because the groups that I'm going to assess for this carbon is I'm going to assess the ethyl group. I'm going to assess the hydroxyl group, the hydrogen, and then this whole side over here, all the way out this bond, all of this is the other side of the molecule. So there are the four groups that are attached to it. And so those four groups are hydrogen, oxygen, that has a hydrogen attached, plus it has two lone pairs. I have a carbon, which is this carbon here of the ethyl group. So that carbon has a carbon attached and two other hydrogens attached. And then I have the carbon, which is here. So let's say that this carbon, see, that was red, I think. That is not what I wanted. There we go. And actually, we can move this sort of into place and say that that's that assessment. The carbon that is here, this carbon has a carbon attached and two hydrogens as well. And so that's the blue carbon. The oxygen and the hydrogen actually make it fairly easy because hydrogen is going to be the lowest priority. So that's going to be priority number 4. The oxygen is going to be the highest priority. That's going to be priority number 1. But I need to figure out the priority for these two carbons. And so far, they look the same. So what I need to do is I need to extend out one more carbon, and I need to branch out. I'll do a double arrow saying that I'm branching out because I haven't found my first point of difference yet. So I need to branch out until I find that first point of difference. That's what I'm really looking for. So on the blue carbon, the next layer down, as I go the next layer down, is going to be another carbon, but this carbon is going to have a chlorine attached, a carbon attached, and a hydrogen attached. So that is that guy there. And I'm trying to figure out how I want to organize all of this to kind of keep it all together. So that's extending out in the blue system, second layer down. Extending out in the red system, it is a carbon which is attached to three hydrogens because that's a methyl on the terminal end. So I'm looking at the three hydrogens that are out on that. And as I'm looking at my image, I'm not very happy with the way that I have sort of documented this out. So I'm going to change the way I'm documenting it out. And let's say that what I want to do is grab this guy, come on, and put it up here. Let's take this, get it out of the way. This is now the second layer. And that is the second layer in the red system, mapping it out. So that's the double arrow and how I've extended out. This one was the first layer. And then let's move these two apart. This is my first layer in my blue. So we'll extend this arrow down. And then this is my second layer in blue. That maybe is a little bit better. So with these first layers, this is my second layer here. With the first layer, there was no difference. And so what I needed to do is I needed to move out until we find the first point of difference. Now we compare the second layers, and in the second layers, what we can see is we do have a clear difference. On the red system, I have a carbon attached to three hydrogens. That's the terminal methyl. And in the blue system, I have a carbon which is attached to a chlorine, a hydrogen, and a carbon. And so that one is clearly going to take priority. That is going to be number two. And the other one over here is going to be number three. So what I'm going to do is take that whole picture. Copy it. Paste it down here. And my prioritization now, actually, let's just throw it onto a new page. My prioritization now tells me that hydrogen is number four. Hydroxyl is number one. The group with the chlorine on it is number two, and the group with the ethyl on it is the lowest priority, number three. I have to take that molecule and turn it around, putting the hydrogen group in back and look down the bond. So basically what I need to do is I need to look down from behind the carbon-hydrogen bond. This is the CH bond. And so we'll draw that over here. Up is going to be the hydroxyl group. And as I turn this thing around, the ethyl group is going to be on the left. And the group that has the chlorine on it, and it's got a couple of other carbons, the group that has the chlorine on it is going to end up over here. I'm not going to do it as a stereocenter for the moment. I'm just going to leave it kind of that way. And so what that means is ethyl group is over here. The blue group is extending out this direction. The hydroxyl group was purple, is sitting at the top. And number wise, this is number one. This is number two. This is number three. And what we can see now is that I am swiping around in a clockwise orientation. And that means that this is an R configuration. Did you guys follow how I prioritize that? Are there any questions in how I prioritized that?
Thanks, yeah, how do you know it's clockwise?
How do I know it's clockwise? When I sweep around, after I do all the prioritizations, I always go from one to two, and from two to three. So I go one to two, two to three, three back to one. You can see that my arrows are going around in a clockwise orientation. They're following the clockwise pattern. Oh, Katrina, good question. What happens when the hydrogen is in the plane? You still have to grab the hydrogen and orient it backwards. You can still do all of the assignments. We do the exact same thing. It just makes it a little bit harder to visualize when you actually grab the hydrogen and put it in the back orientation. So one of the things that I can demonstrate with that is, let's say that my drawing had the hydrogen in the plane, so that my ethyl and methyl are going back. You still just grab the hydrogen, and once you grab it, you put the hydrogen back, and it still settles down. And it doesn't matter what orientation it settles, as long as that hydrogen is back. As we prioritize the groups, we would still prioritize them, and it will still sweep around in the same orientation, no matter what orientation I draw the molecule as I orient it around. So if the hydrogen is in the plane, you grab it, you push the hydrogen back, and you see where the other groups fall. And you just have to be very careful not to change the orientation of the other three groups so that they stay consistent relative to each other. I hope that made sense in terms of the way I worded that. But yes, if the hydrogen is in the plane, it doesn't change anything. We still do the exact same process. Okay, so what we have decided here is that that hydroxyl was number three. So number three carbon, number three is R. Now what we need to do is we need to go back and we need to look at number five and figure out what number five is. So let's grab this molecule. Let's take it down. And now we assess number five. Okay, in looking at number five carbon, the hydrogen is back. And my four groups this time will keep the chlorine the same color. We will make the long group here the red group this time. We will make the methyl group the blue. Wrong pen. Make the methyl group the blue. And the hydrogen will make green. Okay, so I've got hydrogen, which is going to be the lowest priority group. That's going to be number four. Chlorine is going to be the highest priority group. That's number one. And I need to decide between number four and number six. Number six is a carbon that has three hydrogens attached. Number four is a carbon that has two hydrogens and a carbon attached as I extend out. And so what that does is that gives priority to the one that has the carbon on it. And so that becomes priority number two. And the other one becomes priority number three. So I'm going to redraw the molecule again. Chlorine is number one. Hydrogen is number four. Methyl is number three. And the other carbon over here on the chain that has the hydroxyl group on it, that's number two. And I take and orient the hydrogen back and look down the bond with the hydrogen back, and I draw what I see in a Newman projection. So the Newman projection now is going to have the chlorine up, the group that extends out with the hydroxyl group. I think I need one more carbon on there. And the methyl group. So my three groups, hydrogen is back, so I don't need that color. I need blue for methyl. I need red for the rest of this chain. So that's that group. And the purple for the chlorine. And my numbering system was 1, 2, and 3. And notice that this is also a clockwise orientation. So this is also an R stereocenter. So the smallest one has to be in back. This is Galen. Would you recommend drawing the molecule backward with the smallest in the back before doing the Newman projection? You can. That can be helpful. So that's not a bad idea. I tend to be able to see it three-dimensionally in my head and be able to visualize what would happen if I were to grab the hydrogen and put the hydrogen in back. So for me, rotation-wise, visually, it is not a problem. However, what I would recommend is to... to get a model kit and to work from the model kit and to maybe not build the entire model of the whole molecule. Sometimes what it's nice to do is to have a model kit that has priority groups on it. For instance, what I can do is I need a hydrogen. Where's hydrogen? swipe one from my other model here. What I tend to do is take, and I'm going to use just my screen camera. So I'm looking right at my screen camera, and I've just made a small molecule that has four substituents in it. I've got a hydrogen, I've got an orange, a green, and a purple. And basically what I do is with a Sharpie marker, I put numbers on them and give them priorities. And I make the hydrogen the lowest priority, number four. And then I decide whether this is an R or an S, and I leave this set up all the time sitting on my desktop. When I have a drawing on a piece of paper, I will pick up the small model and I will orient the hydrogen with where it goes and my other prioritization groups where they go. And then I will actually just take and rotate it and look at it, looking down the hydrogen carbon bond and see where the groups fall and orient them with my model, making it easier to draw my model. It just is a helpful little tool. Or you can build the entire model using your model kit. That's probably a good way to start. Then grab the lowest priority group, orient it back, look down it, and then you can prioritize your groups. Working from physical models for right now is really helpful to develop and build that sense of being able to rotate it in your mind. Does that make sense? Is a good way. And usually what I do is I build two of these. I build one that is an R, and I build one that is an S, and I have them both on the desktop, and I pick up each one and see which one matches the molecule that I'm trying to do, and then I work with that one. That's the way that I physically do the drawings. It helps out a little bit to have one that is R and one that is S. So that's two ways to be able to deal with that. Number one, go ahead and draw it with a hydrogen back and then assess priorities, put it in the Newman. Number two, use a physical model to represent it and draw the Newman from the physical model. Okay, what we didn't do is we didn't put the name to this molecule now. So we knew that this molecule was 3-hydroxy-5-chloro-3-hexanol. So let's put the name to this molecule now. We'll paste the molecule back in here. We had the fact that each one of these stereocenters was an R. So I have a 3R, 5R. That is part of the name. We had the fact that this was a 3-all, that was the alcohol. We had the 5-chloro. And now the name comes together. We put the stereochemical out in front. It becomes 3R, 5R. A dash follows, following the substituents in alphabetical order, 5-chloro. And then this was a hex, N-3-all. And that is the entire name of the molecule now, with each of the stereochemical indicators telling us the configuration of each of the stereocenters. Okay? And now that we have this, we can ask a question: how many molecules are represented by this formula? So if I took this formula, and let's say, how many molecules are represented, and by that we're saying how many different isomers, stereoisomers. By the formula, and what I'll do is without any stereochemical indicators, I'll just draw the formula there. So what I'm asking is, if I take this and we look at the molecule that I just worked with, which was the 3R, 5R, and for that we had the hydroxyl group back and the chlorine forward, I could draw its mirror image, and its mirror image can be drawn in one of two ways. Ooh, I'll get to easy. Hang on a second, Finn. I'll get that question. Let me finish drawing what I've got going here. Let me draw its mirror image. its mirror image would have this configuration. This is one way to draw the mirror image, where I literally draw the mirror of it. This would be the 3S, 5S. We could go through and prove that. But when you do the mirror image, you flip each of the stereochemical indicators. The other way to draw that mirror image is to draw it consistent with the way I drew on the right, putting the hydroxyl group here, but forward, and the chlorine in the same location, but back. If I take that molecule and I rotate it 180 degrees on its axis, what I get is I get the mirror image drawing that I have drawn up above. Because as you rotate it, the hydroxyl group goes back and the chlorine comes forward. So that's two ways to draw its mirror image. So I can get the 3R, the 5R, the 3S, the 5S, but the other two possible candidates are to flip one stereo center, but not the other. So for instance, I could flip the chlorine back, leaving the hydroxyl group back. Here I have flipped the chlorine. So the chlorine would now be, chlorine was number 5. So this would be the 5S, but the 3R. Let's see, so I'm doing something that is going to lead to questions and be unclear. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to just go in and put in R, R, S, 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 S. This one is S and R. And then I will draw its mirror image. And its mirror image would have the hydroxyl group, in this case, the way that I'm drawing it back, the chlorine also back, but this is going to be the S and R. So configuration-wise, what I have done is I have done 3R, 5S, and 3S, 5R. And those are 4 distinct isomers, 2 pairs of enantiomers. So these guys are a pair of enantiomers. And a pair of enantiomers down below. And when I compare the molecules to each other this way, these are what are called diastereomers. They are not mirror images. They are not superimposable, but they have the same chemical formula and the same atom connectivity, and therefore they are diastereomers. So the stereomers, it's missing an R in there. So that makes diastereomers. It is also true that they are diastereomers on the diagonals, so that diagonally to each other, they are diastereomers. So there are 4 total isomers by this. The answer is that there are 4 isomers, stereoisomers. And the number of stereoisomers follows a pattern that it is 2 to the n, where n equals the number of stereocenters. So if we have a table of stereocenters, and isomers, if n equals 1, then the number of isomers is 2, and you have a pair of enantiomers. If n equals 2, you get 4 isomers, 2 pairs of enantiomers and diastereomers. If n equals 3, then I've got 2 times 2 is 4 times 2 is 8, and I get up to 8 isomers. You can see how it goes up exponentially and the number of isomers that I can create based on the number of stereocenters that are within the molecule. And this is what I should say is the maximum number. The number of actual isomers may be less. We'll get to that in a minute. So let me go back to Finn's question. Finn had a question that said, so we always look at the bottom of the molecule in order to determine the rotation. Can we do a ZE and an RS example? A ZE and RS would have stereochemical double bond, Z and E, and a stereochemical stereocenter that would have R and S. And yes, we can do that. I don't know that we need to do that right this second. We can do that in a little bit. I want to stick with one type of stereochemistry for the moment. We can go back and do Z and E together with R and S later. But so we always look at the bottom of the molecule in order to determine the rotation. Finn, I'm not exactly certain. I think that what you mean by the bottom of the molecule, Finn, if I'm interpreting the question correctly, we put the lowest priority group back. We put the hydrogen back. And so that seems like we're picking it up and looking at the bottom of the molecule. I think that's what you're saying. But in answer to the question is, we always put the lowest priority group back. And the lowest priority group doesn't always have to be the hydrogen. The lowest priority group can be a different element rather than hydrogen. Let's take an example and look at an example where that happens. So let's take a molecule and let's make a stereocenter by putting, I feel like I need something else other than chlorine.
Hey, Jason.
Yeah.
Do you mind if I point something out on the where you were with the enantiomers and diastereomers?
Please.
I think that something that helps me is when I look at enantiomers, if you notice that every single stereocenter flips from R to S, whereas yes. Diastereomers, they don't. That's like a little trick.
No, that's a great thing to point out. And that's what I probably wasn't being clear enough when I said that. Let me try and highlight that with color and make that point. That if we take R and make all of the R's red, then when you go to an enantiomer, we'll make all the S's blue, that the S's flip, and that in the set of enantiomers, every stereocenter must flip. That is true when we go down to the bottom and we look at, let's see, I did S in blue. So here we do S. And this was supposed to be an S, but it looks like a 5. That looks a little better. So there's an S there. And we did the R's in red. So you can see how the stereocenters are flipping from the enantiomers. So at the top set, it goes RR and SS in its enantiomer. In the bottom, it goes RS and then SR in its enantiomer. So Linnea is very helpfully pointing out that that is absolutely true, that when you have an enantiomer, every stereocenter must flip. And if you have one that does not, then they are not enantiomers. That is one way to recognize enantiomers versus diastereomers, is that you can recognize it just by the stereochemical designation itself. For instance, before I draw this molecule, that if I have two molecules and one of them is a 2s, 3r, 5r, its enantiomer, if I want to draw it or just write it, enantiomer must be 2r, 3s, 5s, and that they all must flip. And if I ask for you for a relationship and I say, all right, I have two molecules. One is a 2s, a 3s, and a 5r. And I ask you about its relationship to a molecule which is 2r, 3r, 5R, and I ask, what is the relationship between these two molecules? Without even looking at them or knowing what the molecule is, I'm asking, are there enantiomers or diastereomers? what you do is you simply look down. All right, we have S, S. There's no S's in the other one. I've got R, 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 R. You can see that two of them has flipped. So the first one is flipped. The second one is flipped. The last one is the same. And that means that these are not enantiomers. These are diastereomers, because they are not all flipped. In order to be the diastereomer, in order to be the enantiomer would have been a 2R, 3R, and then 5S. That would have been the enantiomer. And so it would have looked this way, R, R, and then S. And that would have been the enantiomer. Does that help and hits what Linnea's question was working? Yeah, Finn, good. Okay. And Linnea, does that adequately highlight out what you were trying to say there as well?
Yeah.
Perfect. Thank you. That was a great, helpful question. Okay. Any other questions before I was going someplace else, number of stereocenters. I know what I was doing. Okay. What if there is no hydrogen on the stereogenic center? So that's sort of our next question here. Let's take a molecule and we'll put a couple of substituents on it. Let's do a CF3 group. Let's do a methyl group, an ethyl group, and we can also put on here a hydroxyl, and we will take, and actually what I'm gonna do is put the ethyl group back. Let's make that the methyl group down. Okay, so here's a molecule and a stereogenic center. And oftentimes when we don't have color, the way that we mark a stereogenic center is to put an asterisk next to the stereogenic center. And that makes it a little bit easier to identify. And so we have four different substituents. We have the hydroxyl group. We have the CF3 group. We have the ethyl group. And we have a methyl group that is on here. So those are our four different groups that we need to prioritize. And basically, what we have is that at each center, looking at this, at each center, I have a carbon with different things attached. The methyl has three hydrogens attached. The ethyl has two hydrogens and a carbon attached. The CF3 group has a carbon with three fluorines attached. And the oxygen, I could think of this as an oxygen that has a hydrogen and two lone pairs. So that's each group delineated out at its first point of difference. And with those groups at their first point of difference, what I want to do now is I want to hit the oxygen is number one. It takes the highest priority. Out of the carbons, the highest priority out of the carbons is going to be the one with the fluorines on it, because the fluorine has the higher atomic mass. And then the ethyl group takes priority three, and the lowest priority group is the methyl, is number four. So in this case, I don't have a hydrogen attached to the stereogenic center. And it is the methyl group which I'm going to have to look down the bond. And so I'm going to want to look down this way, looking down the bond towards the methyl group, putting the methyl group in the back. And that means that I will take and put the CF3 group at the bottom. The hydroxyl group looks like it's going to end up on the right-hand side, and the ethyl group is going to end up on the left-hand side. And so my priorities, I've got hydroxyl, I've got fluorine, I've got ethyl, and it is number one, number two, number three, and I am sweeping around consistently. For some reason, I keep doing clockwise orientations. I am doing these randomly, and I am not trying to do them all R, but that's just the way that they are coming out this morning, is that I'm just hitting them all R. But that's how you do a prioritization when there is no hydrogen. So you just go through and prioritize them all exactly the way you would, and the lowest priority group always goes back. Is that clear to everybody? And I also did it here, so I put that methyl in an orientation where it was not a hash or wedge bond, it was in the plane. So this goes back to Katrina's question, is what if your lowest priority group is not in the plane? You still do the same thing. You take the lowest priority group, you grab it, and I literally think about grabbing it, turning it, and looking down the bond. I have to actually turn it towards you to look down the bond. So whatever that lowest priority group is, I grab that lowest priority group and then I turn it and I look down the bond and then I see where each of the different groups go. And so I physically use my hands a lot when I'm doing this and think about what the orientation of those groups would be. How would the lone pairs affect when comparing an element? That's a good question too. Let's take a look at another molecule. Let's take a look at this group here. Okay, the nitrogen here is chiral. The stereocenter is a nitrogen, not a carbon. So not all stereogenic centers need to be carbons. A stereogenic center can be a different element if it has four different groups attached to it. It looks like the nitrogen only has three groups, but the nitrogen actually has a lone pair. So in the configuration as drawn, what I would do is I would go through and add the priorities. But what I would do this time is that the lone pair gets number four. It gets the lowest priority of all groups. So the lone pair has the lowest possible priority when assigning prioritizations. Going up from that, the benzene ring would have number two, the methyl would have number three, the hydrogen would have, wait, what did I do? Excuse me, start over. Benzene ring would be number one, methyl would be number two, hydrogen would then be number three. And so when I take it and look down the bond, I'm looking down the nitrogen bond now, back towards the lone pair. And orientation is not super critical, but it would be hydrogen, methyl, and then aromatic ring system. And they would be number three, number two, number one. And luckily for me this time, I'm sweeping around in a counterclockwise orientation. And that's an S. So this would be an S stereo system, stereo center, and using a lone pair as the lowest priority group. So that was a great question too. Okay.
Wait, Jason?
Yeah, go for it.
The question was more like when you're comparing it like when you're comparing the H's and the C's in the parentheses.
Okay. That doesn't come up very often, fortunately. So what winds up happening is if you have, let me see if I can do that. The only place that I can think that it really comes up is that if I have two nitrogens and I have a lone pair, and this guy's got two hydrogens on him, and the other one is an oxygen, it's got two lone pairs. It fortunately doesn't come up very often because as I'm going through and doing my prioritizations, it's really the carbons that wind up having substituents on them that make it more important to assess, such as what I'm doing here. Mapping out the oxygen has a hydrogen and two lone pairs. the nitrogen has a hydrogen, two hydrogens, and a single lone pair. And I was throwing them into the prioritization so that you could see them, but the decision is made on the element before you ever hit the lone pair. So for instance, oxygen has the higher atomic mass, that's gonna be number one. Nitrogen, number two. Carbon on the ethyl is gonna be number three because of the carbon kicker that's there. The methyl group would be number four in the lowest priority. So I never actually even hit the lone pairs or have to use the lone pairs in terms of prioritizations. I could probably make an example where that would be the case, but I'd be hard pressed to do it. And that's not something I generally do to you guys. That's just sort of an esoteric oddball in trying to get you guys to prioritize and use the lone pairs and prioritizations. I don't anticipate you needing to do that. I just tend to show them so that you see that they're there and that I'm prioritizing three groups. I'm looking at all three groups that are attached to an element when I'm making a prioritization. If the element is in common, two nitrogens, two oxygens, two carbons, I need to go to the kickers and branch out and see where the first point of difference is. Does that answer it?
Yeah.
Cool. Any other questions? Everybody else doing okay so far? Okay, let me ask you another question. So let's take a molecule and let's ask how many possible isomers there are for this general formula. I have not drawn stereocenters. How many stereoisomers possible? I don't know why I'm having trouble trying to write today. I can draw, but I can't write. How many stereoisomers possible for this diol? It is a 1,2 cyclohexane diol. So how many isomers would I expect for this? How many stereocenters, first of all? Two stereocenters. Katrina's got it. Okay, so there's two stereocenters. So with two stereocenters, I would say that that is 2 to the n, which is going to be 2 to the 2, which is going to equal 4 stereoisomers. Everybody agree? I'm going to take the lack of answer as being nod. Yeah, Francisco's got a nod. So yeah, I agree. Remember, you got the thumbs up thing. You can hit the thumbs up button. You got to practice this feedback thing. I got to have something here. I'm just talking to a computer screen. It's me in a dungeon over here. And it's not quite a dungeon. It's actually pretty good. Although it gets hot in here with all my lights on. Okay, so let's take this molecule and see if that is actually the case. Do I actually have 4 stereoisomers and can I draw them all? So let's draw them all and see what happens. So first off, let's do the obvious ones where I can do both of the hydroxyl groups back. And then I could draw both of the hydroxyl groups forward. I could draw one of the hydroxyl groups back and one forward. And I could do the other one, its reverse, where I make the first one forward and the second one back. Those are all 4 stereoisomers, right? We haven't put R or S to them. All I've done is basically draw them as their mirror images, as being flipped. The only problem that I would say is that let's do an example here where I have drawn them in pairs. Let's take this molecule on the right-hand side, top right-hand side, and let's imagine that we rotate it 180 degrees on a vertical axis, and let's redraw the molecule after rotating it 180 degrees on the vertical axis. So as I redraw that molecule, which we agree that those two our stereocenters have been entirely flipped. Let's redraw that. And as I do that, both of these groups now are going to go backwards. They'll be oriented in that orientation as I rotate it, right? So everybody's following me so far. And then what I want to do is I want to rotate it about, actually, I want to draw that I'm going to rotate it this way. And I'm going to rotate it about one bond length. I don't know if that's like 30 degrees, that direction. So that once I rotate it, I'm going to take that molecule, see if I have enough space to get it in there. Move things over just to give me a little bit more room. And redraw that. So that's what I get after I go through and do that rotation. And if I take that molecule and slide it over, is it not superimposable on the one that I have right there? Are those not the same molecule? They are the same molecule, right? So this is same as original. Let's go through and do that exercise with the lower one and see what happens when I do that with the lower one. With the lower one, if I take and I rotate it 180 degrees and I draw that, what I get is the hydroxyl group forward and backwards. And then let's rotate that one, my little 30 degree rotation, and redraw that. And what we see is that when I take this molecule and copy it and slide it over, that it does not superimpose, that it is a true enantiomer. So this actually is a mirror image. So what happened here? What happened here is that I have three molecules, not four. I have this molecule, and I have these two. And I'll draw its mirror image so that we have it. See, how did I want to draw it? Yeah, I'll draw it that way. Makes it a little bit easier to see. That these two are enantiomers, but this molecule has no enantiomer. Basically, what's happening is that molecule has a plane of symmetry that runs down the molecule. It's symmetrical. The symmetry of the molecule does not, yeah, it might be 60 degrees, Francisco. Nice. We can change that later. I'll make that a notation. The symmetry about the molecule allows for the molecule and its mirror image to be superimposable. And what it does is the symmetry knocks down the number of isomers that are possible. And the molecule gets a specific name. It's called meso. So this molecule, the one that's up above, is what is called meso. Meso is a molecule that is not chiral? Does not rotate plane polarized light? Due to a plane of symmetry. In the molecule. It has stereocenters. It just doesn't have an enantiomer because the molecule and its enantiomer are superimposable. So that's what meso literally means. And so what happens there with that molecule is that when we have a plane of symmetry, the stereochemical outcome gets knocked out. So if we put both the groups back or both the groups forward, the plane of symmetry in the molecule means that if I pancake this, it and its mirror image are superimposable. So if I take the molecule and I flip it about its axis and I rotate it 180 degrees about its axis, what I wind up getting is the original molecule back. So basically we're pancaking it and you end up with the original, which means that there's no enantiomer and that the molecule is not chiral. The molecule has stereocenters. It absolutely does have two stereocenters. And we can go through and we can give it stereochemical designations because of the two stereocenters. But what happens is the molecule is not chiral because of this superimposability of the molecule and its mirror image. And that can happen when we have a molecule that has symmetry in this way as well. So I can put a hydroxyl group and two hydroxyl groups back. And this molecule has a plane of symmetry that runs directly down the center of the molecule. And because of that plane of symmetry, this molecule is not chiral either. So also not chiral due to symmetry. So the symmetry can cut through the middle of a molecule. The symmetry can also cut through the middle of an element. In this instance, I'm cutting right through the middle of the hydrogen and the oxygen. And because I can do that, it means that the molecule is not chiral. If there's a plane of symmetry within the molecule, it means that the molecule is meso and is achiral and will not rotate plane polarized light. So for some molecules, when we say that formula of 2 to the n, that there are 2 to the n isomers where n equals the number of stereocenters, stereocenters, ERS, this is a maximum number. And the number may be less. Due to symmetry. And mesoisomers. So that's giving you a maximum number, but you have to think about then, is there any symmetry in the molecule that can bring about a mesoisomer, which would knock out one of the stereoisomers from the number. Okay, let's see. Any questions on that in terms of mesoisomers? There's some fun things later on with that that I'll show you in terms of how we name those mesoisomers, because the question is, in the molecule that I've drawn, is this an actual stereocenter or not? And if you look at it, you would see that around the right-hand side of the ring and around the left-hand side of the ring, it's identical. And so it's not actually a stereocenter, but it kind of is a stereocenter, because wouldn't these two be different isomers? So these two are different. It also has the plane of symmetry down the middle, but they're clearly different from each other. So they have to have different names. So these two molecules, both meso, are different. And that means that that center carbon, even though I can't give it a stereochemical designation, gets a pseudo stereochemical designation. It is a pseudo stereocenter, which is really kind of a cool idea too. We'll pick that up next time, I think. And we'll talk about pseudo stereocenters, how to name them. And the one question that we had earlier was, remember I said that a stereocenter must be a tetrahedral carbon? Let me give you this to think about. So if I have an alenic system and I put a CH3 group on one side and on the front side coming out towards me, I put an ethyl group. And on the other carbon, I put maybe a, not a hydroxyl, let's put a fluorine there. And on the lower carbon, let's put a bromide. Does this carbon have a stereocenter? Is there a tetrahedral carbon in this alenic system? And yet, if I take this and I switch two of the centers such that I put the ethyl group back and the methyl group forward, and I keep the fluorine and the bromine where they are, and then I take this molecule and I try to superimpose it, you can see that the fluorine and the bromine line up, but the ethyl and the methyl don't line up. And yet, this carbon that is here is sp hybridized. And yet, these two are enantiomers. So what's happening is here, the three carbons, if we point to all three carbons, the three carbons are acting as one stereocenter. Even though they're sp2 and sp hybridized, and there is no sp3 hybridized carbon in there. So that's kind of a cool little thing that we can have different types. Why do you put the circle in the middle? Because in an alenic system, if I take, what we're doing is we're doing a carbon, double bond, carbon, double bond, carbon. One of those carbons has to be in plane, and the other one, because of the way the double bonds are, has to be orthogonal. It has to be like a carbon-carbon triple bond, where you've got one set of pi bonds which are vertical and one set of pi bonds which are horizontal. And so that necessitates that one go up and down and the other one go forward and back. And rather than have it look like one big long double bond, we put the dot in the center representing the center carbon. So that dot represents the center carbon. Center sp carbon. That's why we use that dot. So it doesn't just look like an extended long double bond. And instead of actually drawing a carbon, it's traditional to put a dot there to represent that carbon. And that's what's called an alenic system, where you have two double bonds fused together. Build a model of it. Take your model kit and build two double bonds to the center carbon, and then look and see what type of geometry you get and see why that might be actually acting as one stereocenter in there, and how we can get stereochemistry out of that. There are many other systems that can be stereochemical as well. Let me remind you that your hands are mirror images, right? Your hands are not an sp3 hybridized carbon. Your hands are larger structures. That stereoisomerism comes from geometry, not from tetrahedralness. So that there are many other systems which are stereochemical in nature and have enantiomers, which don't have chiral carbons in them at all. So there's some thoughts, and we can look at some of those systems when we come back. But I am out of time, and I've been going, so I'm going to open it up for questions, and I'll take a few minutes and answer any questions you guys have. And if there are no questions, I'm going to remind you to send me your quizzes by email so that I can grade them and get them back to you. And the next quiz that we have will probably be on stereochemistry, and I anticipate that that will be, next Monday. And from there, if there's no questions, can we go over the co-op? Finn, if you want to hang on the line, I'm more than happy to go over the co-op. If anybody wants to hang on the line and do that too, and there's questions on the co-op, I'm more than happy to try to address those too. I'll stay on the line for a little bit and help you with that, Finn. To everybody else, I will see you later, and I'll see the afternoon group in a couple of hours for afternoon lab. And other than that, have a good day, and we'll talk to you later. You're welcome, guys. Okay, Finn, why don't you unmute your microphone and ask me what you want to ask me about the co-op?
I have to bring it up real quick, 1 second.
Yeah.
Hi, Jason. Can I also ask you questions about the co-op after Finn?
Please, Anne. Absolutely. Stay on the line, and we'll see if we can address all those questions.
Thank you.
I have to say, this is such an interesting class that when you start doing it online, and I don't get to see all your faces all the time, I still remember all your beautiful faces, but what comes to me more are your voices, and I start recognizing the voices, that I can pick out Francisca's voice and Finn's voice and Anne's voice, and Sarah's voice comes across really clear, Dina's voice when I hear it, that all of you who speak up more, I start to recognize the voices. I don't even have to look up at the screen to know who's talking anymore. It's kind of cool. So Finn, while you're looking for it, maybe I can let Anne go if she's got her question all together. And then when you find it, we can address your question. Does that sound cool, Finn?
Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, Anne, go ahead and ask it.
Yes. So for questions number two on the co-op, so it says that make the models of each in the WebML, but I don't know how to make the model like of cis and trans.
Okay. Let me see if I can address that for you in a way that's going to help you. All right, since we're going to do the co-op, I'm going to turn off my iPad and see. Let me see how I want to do this. It's not going to let me screen share my computer. Okay, I think I can do it from my iPad. And then I need to get cooperative 2, 3 confirmation. So we're on co-op 3, question number 2, build the cis and trans in the chair confirmation. That's what we're looking at, right?
Yes.
Okay, let's see how to do that. So let's go to WebMO. Let me go back to build, new. And in order to get a chair confirmation, there's a couple of different ways that you can get the chair confirmation. One way is to literally build it like a chair so that I can plunk down a carbon, build it as I would if it were an actual chair, okay? And then go to the cleanup function and use the idealized geometry. I think it's the brush tool. That did not do what I wanted it to. That just messed it all up. Let me try the molecular mechanics. Nope, it is toast. New. Let's try again. I haven't tried to do this on my iPad. I usually do it on the computer. And if I were screen sharing on the computer, I know how I would show you how to do it. Let's add hydrogens. That is just getting so tweaked. Clean up like the mechanics. Nope, still tweaking it. Okay, let's do this. You guys have the emails up that have my office hours in it, right? So where you can click to link into my office hours. Let me end this recording. Let me end this session and then have you guys log back into my office hours one after I reset my computer and restart it so that I can then do this from my computer screen with the right tools on it so that I can show you exactly how to do it. And we'll do it that way. Give me about 5 minutes to make those changes and then have everybody who wants to address this with the co-op log back in and you can watch and follow me along as I do it from the computer screen and I can walk you through how to do it. How does that sound, Anne?
Yeah, it sounds great. Thank
cool. you. All right, Matt's on that, Finn's on it. Cool from Matt. All right, yeah, everybody log out and we'll log back in 5 minutes, but into the office hours one.